Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Lara, how are ya?
Morena, yep, just, you know, watching the populism unfold in front of me, you know, on a Sunday. But I see the political week has started and we're definitely in for an election year, aren't we? There's a lot going on already.
What's with the policy announcements on a Sunday? That's a bit gnarly, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel for the journalists that have to work 7 day weeks now. But basically, yeah, sort of Sunday afternoon, I can't remember what I was doing, maybe cleaning my house or something. And then I like noticed on RNZ, it was like, there's going to be a National Party announcement around 2 o'clock. And then it was like, there's going to be a New Zealand First announcement. Winston Peters is giving a speech around 2 o'clock. And I was like, okay, I guess I better look at my phone at 2 o'clock. And I sure did. And sent screenshots of both announcements, actually, to various political scientist mates. And then was like, look, populism. It's like, here's the National Party announcement. Here's Winston Peters one-upping it. You know, like very much the hold my beer type meme idea here. Of like, I'm going to do a bit of populism around the sex offenders. And Winston Peters was like, no, I'm going to go for the banks. And so it was actually ultimately quite interesting Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what does this mean in terms of the election? Like, do you think they're just pumping out the policy so that, you know, people are engaged?
Well, I think that this is really, like, showing that New Zealand is moving more of that kind of populism that we've seen all around the world. Mm. I mean, we've been a bit slow to get there for various reasons. And now we're going down that rhetoric of who is an out-group to target? How can we show that we're hard on crime? How can we show that in the case of National, you know, the removal of the ability for sex offenders to have the good character references? That's what their policy was. So, you know, showing that you're tough on crime. And then we've also seen some anti-immigration type policies announced, of course, and that kind of rhetoric popping up in the last couple of weeks. So that's another kind of key part of populism, creating an out-group that you can target. Mm-hmm. And migrants has been the traditional one within the sort of populism literature and all over the world. And then the other one, of course, is the elites targeting the banks, which is what Winston Peters and New Zealand First did over the weekend, was really talk about, hey, we want to buy back the Bank of New Zealand, merge it with Kiwi Bank and create this kind of big bank to keep the Australian banks out, was his argument, and also make Kiwi Saver compulsory from birth and kind of give children something like $1,000 across a certain amount of time in their bank accounts to encourage saving. So that's really kind of looking at those sorts of big corporates, those big companies, plus also tying in the fact that, you know, most of the banks are Australian-owned and targeting the kind of economic elite as an out-group, which I think is the kind of populism that more people can get behind, firstly. It's kind of left-wing economic populism that we've seen in different parts of the world. But I think it also speaks to, yeah, New Zealand First and Winston Peters' ability to kind of read the room and kind of figure out what it is that people actually want at this point. We've instantly seen various economists kind of go, oh, what a silly idea. I saw something calling him loopy and calling him this and that. But it's not, I mean, it's not necessarily that they're going to buy, if New Zealand First forms a government, that the government would buy back the Bank of New Zealand for, like, someone said $20 billion or whatever it is. But it's just showing that he's really serious at targeting the banks and the banking sector and that he wants something very big and structural, which I think will appeal to a lot of people. So that's what we've seen over the weekend. I think we can expect more of this sort of stuff on the head up to the election, especially just the idea of there being more economic populism was kind of quite exciting to me because we haven't seen as much of that. We've seen the immigration one, but not the targeting of the banking elites, et cetera, which actually, you know, I think most experts would agree that that's where actually a lot of the problem is for economic inequality.
Yeah. I feel like you hear the word populism and immediately it's quite a frightening term. But there are some cases in which it can do better, right?
Yeah, totally. It's meant to construct this, like, little guy, this kind of hard done by, I guess, Kiwi battler in our case, but, you know, this, like, kind of average common folk. And then it's meant to create this group, these out-groups that are not the common folk and are not for the common folk's interests. And then a lot of time populism does then kind of say, okay, we've got these simple solutions. They're normally very straightforward. They normally try to make it not so technocratic, not so long-winded, not real expert-based or anything, or evidence-based, and say, this is our policy. And it always seems like intuitively quite simple, those sorts of policies. Mm-hmm. And then when someone breaks them down, they're not, it's not actually based on fact and so on and so forth. But there are places where populism actually can be across the political spectrum, and people can kind of go, that is a good solution, actually, that is a simple solution that actually works. So, yeah, generally, though, populism has been associated with Trump, with, like, Boris Johnson, with, you know, even, like, Peter Dutton in Australia more recently, Orban in Hungary, like, Duterte in the Philippines, and the sort of, I'm reading a book at the moment about the, like, people murdering, the state murdering people they view as drug addicts, you know, like, that kind of thing is where populism often gets associated. But there's actually a whole bunch of different types of populism, including in, like, Latin America, which tends to be anti-big corporations, anti-neoliberalism.
Mm. You'd sort of hope that this, like, wave of populism that we're starting to see here and this the huge amount of policy that's rolling out would get Labour to get their A into G a little bit and actually do something and announce some stuff.
Look, I don't know. I really don't know.
It's feeling a little, like, slow over that end of the
spectrum. We're all looking at our watches. We're all waiting. Yep. I know there was an interview with Hipkins on Q&A, and he defended why there's no policy, but I've not watched it yet, which kind of probably speaks to their ability to engage people.
Mm.
But, we would expect a bit more policy at this point. We'll see, really. I mean, it looks like Winston Peters is being really masterful, again, kicking things off, taking up the space, I mean, doing what he kind of knows, you know, doing what he knows and what he's been doing over decades and decades. I mean, that's what he's doing at this point. I would also like to defend Labour, I guess, a bit, in that we're still 5.5 months from the election, or, like, what are we, 5 months away from when people start voting? So maybe there's, like, carefully planned series of announcements in, like, July, August, September, October, maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay, maybe. Potentially.
We'll see. Question mark.
It's certainly election year, though. There was something in the spin-off the other day about National not getting as many list seats because they won so many seats, so many electorates last election time. Do you want to explain why that would be kind of a good strategy?
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting piece in the spin-off about this. So this idea that because National... So different political parties have a different electorate vote versus party vote mix, right?
Mm.
Over time, basically we hit the 90s and Labor and National held electorate seats under the first-past-the-post system, and then we adopted MMP, the mixed member proportional system. And so National still have a lot of those electorates and hold a lot of electorates relative to their party vote, which means they get fewer MPs in off the list. Because the way the math works is they take the party vote and then they allocate all the electorates that you've won, and then whoever's left comes in off the list, the ranked list. So, like, however far up you get. And sometimes that means that, you know, a lot of people come in. For example, the Greens and ACT at the moment are parties where a couple of people come in electorates, and then the rest is just the list up to their proportion of the party vote. For Labour, it's always meant a few more list MPs relatively. Mm-hmm. And for National, they're now at this point where their party vote is getting quite far down in the polls. So they're kind of hitting those late 20s. And if you look at the number of electorates they're then allocated from the list, or a number of electorates plus the number of MPs they're allocated from the list, that starts to get pretty low, that list MP proportion. And people have even speculated, you know, that might make people like Chris Bishop a bit more desperate, or someone like Nicola Willis, who are very high up the list. But if their party vote continues to collapse, they're going to have fewer and fewer list MPs. And we've always seen over time is the list is a really good place to protect your senior talent and your more kind of loyal people, or people who would be cabinet ministers as well. Sometimes people will go off, will not be in an electorate, but they'll instead just be on the list because they're expected to be a minister, or, you know, they've given up their seat previously as a minister.
Mm.
So we've now got this idea that perhaps National should try to lose some electorates. I don't buy that one. This is not the one for me, because National has interestingly always said they never really supported the MMP system. They've been more critical of list MPs over time. So in a way, they're kind of getting what they wish for this whole time, is that like a higher proportion of electorate MPs. I think they would argue that, hey, if someone's good enough to win in an electorate, then they're good enough to be an MP. But they've also got this history of standing less demographically representative candidates in those seats. So mm-hmm. a lot of, say, ethnic minorities miss out on safe seats, or women are less likely to be nominated for safe seats, I think, across the board, and especially within national. So that kind of becomes a problem for them.
Yeah, definitely. So do you think it's a bit of an early marker, things like this coming out, that they're in real trouble?
I think we've seen major parties in real trouble all around the world. Like in Australia, the absolute collapse of the right with One Nation coming up, it has been quite surprising. And I mean, the analogy here would be New Zealand First taking their votes. And of course, they've got ACT here as well that could potentially take national vote, more of national vote. So I think that's one of those things that the major parties might wave off as like, oh, it's okay, you know, like we'll perform well next year. But really, we can see this kind of, we might be seeing a structural shift in a lot of these sort of similar democracies. So I think they've really got to take this seriously and keep an eye out, really. I mean, this could be like a more long-term structural shift. You see the major party vote share over time dropping gradually across elections. So, I mean, it doesn't happen very often that you see the sort of what they call like a sort of party system realignment, technically in political science. But you don't see the kind of structure of political parties and how they kind of, yeah, you don't see that they're kind of proportional, the power relations between political parties change very often. It's not really a common thing, but we might be in for that. We might be in for someone like New Zealand First becoming a major third party. And I don't know if we'd go to a free party system necessarily, but, you know, like, what if National got 26% and New Zealand First got 20%? Or we always have this talk in terms of the Greens, because every now and then the Greens will go up in the polls, for example, 2017, before Labour changed their leader. It's like, what if we have a major third party? It might actually happen one day and it might be stable. I mean, that's what it's starting to look like is happening in the UK and Australia.
Wow, fascinating.
Yeah, so interesting. Just quickly before we let you go, major curveball plot twist in the Te Pāti Māori law, Hone Hararewa is coming back.
Yeah, that's what I've heard rumours about this, and people say, and I was like, no way. Thinking that maybe he was, you know, on the older side of things, he seemed to be early 70s. But I'm like, okay, if he's talked to his whānau and he's looked at his priorities, he knows what it's like to be an MP, I'm like, go on, Matua, have a go. But we haven't seen him confirmed necessarily as a Te Pāti Māori candidate up there. One thing that's a real challenge for Te Pāti Māori is rebuilding the kind of structure of their political party in the north. So a lot of the sort of delegates and a lot of the people doing the secretaries and the, you know, the people doing the admin and the organising had left to follow Maria Meno Kapakingi. So, I mean, if anyone can probably rebuild the party in the north, probably Hone Hararewa. And it's kind of an interesting point because, you know, he had left what was the Maori Party in what was about 2011 to start the Mana Party, and then ultimately left Parliament, was voted out, did not return back in when he formed a strange kind of agreement with the internet party, which was Kim.com. I don't know if anyone much remembers that, but it was a
crazy, crazy time.
That was really quite something. I remember even being a child and being like, what is happening here?
What is happening? And, it, you know, like, I still don't actually know what happened. I'm still like, that was a weird time, eh?
The internet mana party.
Yeah, and so, you know, it might be that, you know, at that point in his life that he wants to come back and he's got those connections and those people who will create that infrastructure. And then what happens is we have a four-way race in the north. Four-way race. Interesting. I honestly, between the four candidates across, you know, Labour, Greens, Ulla Jean Prime, Huhana Linden, Maria Meno Kapakingi with her new Te Pai Tokoro party, and Hone Hararewa, I have no idea. I've got no idea what would happen.
Yeah, absolutely that'll be a really interesting part of the election to watch out for. So fascinating, this Hone Hararewa coming back thing for me, because when he left and they split off, it was quite fiery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're looking at it coming back together. So
yeah, and the kind of past beef he's had with John Tomahedi, I'm like, okay, I guess they've kind of I guess they're good now.
He might be the first person ever to get over beef with John Tomahedi.
Yeah, that does track, yeah. Yeah. <might be.
laughs> buzzy. Okay, well, I guess we'll just wait and see what happens. But thank you so much, Lara. So much interesting stuff to watch out for as the election year heats up, eh?
Oh, so much. And this is the thing. Just Māori politics alone has so much going on,
yeah.
Let alone just New Zealand First alone. I can't believe there's still like 5 months until we're voting.
I know. Right, thank God we have you to keep us informed.
Yes.
Doing God's work, Lara. Keep it up and thank you so much. We'll catch up with you next week, eh?
Thanks.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.